Agenda is Senator Sparks, Senate File 448, and I understand you have an amendment.
Madam Chair, yes, I do have the A9 amendment, I believe it is.
Then pass out the amendment. You have it in your packet, and I believe you are removing our jurisdiction from your bill, right?
That's correct, Madam Chair. And first of all, I want to say thank you very much for putting me to the top of the list. I know that you guys have a very busy schedule, and I have a committee that's going on right now. But that would Senate File 448 is before you today because it includes language that appears to create a new task force. However, that was not my intention to create a task force. Over the last year, the commissioner has worked with industry representatives to make recommendations that resulted in the bill. What we'd like to do is to direct the commissioner to continue that work and develop a set of new recommendations regarding biofuels. The A9 amendment will correct that language and put it in that form. I would hope the committee would be willing to adopt that amendment and would appreciate it, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Ms. James, with this amendment then, would this remove any reference to a task force in the bill?
Madam Chair and members, yes, this would eliminate the reference to the task force and keep it in its current format, which is a very informal group of advisors to the commissioner.
Okay. Any questions about this this amendment? Yes.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Senator Sparks.
Senator Hall. I did that again.
What'd you do?
Called you Dahl. Senator Hall.
I like that.
Depends how you spell it, right?
Yeah, there you go. I had a hard time hearing. What is this bill really all about?
Actually, the bill, I'm sorry.
Or are we on the amendment?
We're on the amendment, actually. If Senator Hall, the purpose here is really just to adopt the amendment, and then it removes it from our jurisdiction, and then he's on his way.
Oh,
that's
okay
with you. Okay, would someone like to offer this amendment? All right. Senator Scalzi offers the A9 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Therefore, we just send him away? Or, we have to re-refer the bill.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, we have to re-refer the bill to where?
Yes, it's currently in our jurisdiction.
Senator Sparks, is this bill going somewhere from here?
Madam Chair, I believe it can go to the Senate floor.
Okay. Then we just need an amendment to send it to the floor.
So moved.
Senator Scalzi moves that Senate File 448 as amended be sent without recommendation to the Senate floor. How about that? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We really hear the bill, so we can't really recommend it. I think Senator Eaton is here. You want to take up your bill right now?
Sure.
Or do you have to go somewhere else?
I'm cool.
Okay. Senate File 1298, then Senator Eaton.
This is the geospatial one.
We'll determine if you're cool.
Wait a minute.
You got to find your bill?
I have it.
Find your file? All right.
And
Saxog's sitting right there.
I already know I'm cool.
We would take him expensive.
Just wanted to double check.
I could ask 1185. Senator Eaton, do you have to be in another committee to present a bill soon, because we were told that you had to do that, and we needed to take you first.
Madam Chair, the issue is that the department's still out in the hall negotiating this.
So why don't we
here they come.
Negotiating this bill before us?
Are we ready?
We're ready.
We're up.
Oh, all right. Sorry, I was going to try to take you, Senator Saxon. All right, Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the department's bill from Minute, OET, Geospatial Office Provisions Modification, Senate File 1298. And John here will explain
Mr. Eichten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Eaton, members, for the record, my name is John Eichten. I'm Legislative Director for the Office of Enterprise Technology, currently doing business as Minute Services. I just want to walk through the bill quickly. Section 1 strikes some redundant language that was carried into Minute OET statutes when the Minnesota Geospatial Information Office was moved from the Department of Administration into Minute. These powers are included elsewhere in the 16E statute, which makes this language no longer necessary. Section 2 eliminates the statutorily mandated State Government Geospatial Advisory Council. This group is now part of the Minute Service's internal governance structure post-IT consolidation. So we'd simply remove that language from statute. The statute would still require MnGeo to host a geospatial advisory council that is representative of the broad community of stakeholders, cities, counties, universities, nonprofits. But the state government advisory council would be put into the Minute governance structure. The
bill Mr. Eichten, a stupid question. What is geospatial?
Very good question, Madam Chair. Geospatial information is electronic geospatial data, per se. In the bill is defined as digital data using geographic or map coordinate values, identification codes, and associated descriptive data to locate and describe features of the Earth.
And that's Section 3.
And that is Section 3.
Thank you.
Exactly. Section 4 requires sharing of geospatial data between government entities at no cost and provides for sharing at no cost without liability. It's intended to promote and increase the sharing of data between governments in order to encourage greater use of the data, to improve its accuracy, and generally make it more easily available and accessible. So this will reduce staff time that's spent negotiating data sharing agreements on the state and local level, and it sets the stage for a central online depository for geospatial information that could be utilized by all levels of government. So if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them. I also have Dan Ross here, who is our Chief Geospatial Information Officer.
And the repealers, the language for the repealers are on the back, on the page 4.
That's correct. And those are some of the redundant powers that were included in the MnGeo statute when it came over.
Okay. Mr. Ross, welcome to the committee, and tell us what you do.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Geospatial people
thank
do.
You. I am the Chief Geographic Information Officer for the state. One of the things that I do is bring geographic data for the state together in a common environment that we can share amongst agencies rather than having agencies have their own silos and obtain their own data from their partners and so on and so forth. That's the language in question here today.
Okay. Any questions from members of the committee? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Eichten, I take it that the Geospatial Advisory Council is already in statute. You're just replacing the councils with the council itself. Is that true?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, yes, there are two councils in statute right now, a state government advisory geospatial advisory council and then a statewide geospatial advisory council. The state government council is the one that we would be removing from statute, and that is being included as part of the Minute governance structure. I'd be happy to provide. We have published a Minute governance document on April of 2012. I'd be happy to provide that to you so you can see the makeup of that council will be the same as the one that's mandated in statute currently.
Thank you.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking at the subdivision that talks about the data being shared. I was wondering, has the Judicial Committee seen this already?
It goes there next.
It does. Okay. That's all I needed.
Okay. And anything here relating to our guidelines, Ms. James, that you've reviewed the bill?
Madam Chair and members, I don't think anything about the guidelines apply exactly.
Okay. Because they're not... They're just saying vaguely they create an advisory council and not structuring it.
Madam Chair, yes. Well, and also the council already exists. They're really subtracting a council.
Okay. All right. Great. Any other questions? Anybody from the audience that would like to testify? Then Senator Eaton.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 1298.
Be recommended to pass and sent to the Judiciary Committee.
Yep.
Okay. All those in, no, it was not amended, correct?
No.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Eaton.
Thank you.
Senator Saxhawk.
Could you sign this?
You have two bills. Which one would you like to take up first?
Senate File 1182, Madam Chair.
Senator Saxhaug, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. 1182 is a bill which would allow cities to issue reconstruction bonds for bituminous overlays in their transportation projects. With me today is Tom Pagel, City Administrator for the City of Grand Rapids, to give some brief testimony.
Mr. Pagel.
Madam Chair, the City of Grand Rapids, like many cities throughout the state, typically do reconstruction projects and bituminous overlays during a construction year. The way we fund these projects is typically we issue general obligation bonds under the Reconstruction Authority, and then we issue just general obligation bonds for the bituminous overlay. So we're issuing two different bonds, two different issuances, because bituminous overlays are not allowed in the reconstruction. One of the issues we struggle with our bituminous overlays is actually proving at least 20% of the project cost as a benefit to the adjacent properties. Yet having a bituminous overlay of a street extending its life 20 to 30 years is a huge benefit to the community as a whole. So by allowing the bituminous overlays into the Reconstruction Authority, it'll allow us to only have to issue one bond, more reflectively assess the actual benefit to the adjacent properties, and then over the next 10 to 15 years, we'll only have to administer one bond issuance instead of two.
Senator Saxhaug, does this bill need to go to finance?
Madam Chair, no, it isn't going to have to go to finance.
It's not.
No.
So it's not something you want for your omnibus bill?
No. Okay. It can go straight to the floor.
Okay. I'm sorry, what? Oh, no. Is it delete all? Oh, we have a delete all amendment, the A1 amendment. Someone want to offer that? Senator Scalzi moves the delete all author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Is that, Senator Hall, did you have an amendment, or that's what you were?
That was what I was referring
to. That was what you were reminding me of. Okay, great.
Madam Chair?
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, why was this split up in the past? Why was bituminous not part of that? Why has it not always been part? There must have been a reason that it was divided in the past. Do you know?
Mr. Pagel.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, I don't know the history behind not including it.
Okay.
Is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify on this bill? Any other questions from members of the committee? Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator
Hall. I would
Hall.
Just say it makes sense. Blacktop is part of Reconstruction, mm-hmm. So I don't see any problem with it.
Right. So they're issuing bonds for the reconstruction. Okay. All right. Senator Scalzi moves that
1182 as amended be passed.
We recommend to pass. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you very
thank
much.
You, Madam
thank you, Mr.
Members.
Pagel. I did not. Was this supposed to go to finance? Didn't you hear we just had that discussion?
Yeah, I know.
I asked Senator Saxhaug. He
wouldn't
think so.
Wouldn't
okay. All right. Well, Senator Saxhaug, if it was supposed to go to finance, I'm sure you'll hear about it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Senator Saxhaug. Senate File 563.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate File 563 is the DNR's annual forestry bill. It is in front of you, and Sections 14 and 20 deal with rulemaking, and that's why it's here today. And with me is Forrest Bowe, the DNR's Director of Forestry, to give brief testimony and answer any questions the chairman or members might have any questions.
Mr. Bowe, it's perfectly fine to just stick to the areas that are under our jurisdiction. And what sections did you say those were?
14.
Senator
Saxhaug? Those are sections 14 and 20 of the bill.
14 and 20. Okay.
Madam Chair, members, the two sections of the bill, 14 and 20, relate to rulemaking.
We're suggesting that we be exempt from the formal rulemaking process. Section 14 is about establishing fees. We currently have fees spread out through spread throughout Chapter 90 in a variety of places. There's some current fees that are already in there and existing. For instance, $125 penalty fee in chapter section 90.151. There's some special use permit fees, etc. And what we're proposing is that all of those things be gathered together in a new section and would be exempt from that rulemaking process. The other
let's start with that. This is section 14.
Correct.
Could you tell us why the rulemaking process doesn't work for you here, why you want to be exempt from it?
Well, Madam Chair, the department pays very close attention to the authorities that were given by the legislature. And, again, just think that these two sections are would be a very formal process, and these would not be a significant enough to go through that formal process.
And you don't think there'd be enough interest by the public in this issue that to go through, you know, even expedited rulemaking?
That's correct.
I mean, how are you going to inform the public about the fee schedule?
Well, we would certainly publish the fee schedule. This is really about doing the business of our timber sales, and we work very closely with our industry partners on the business portion of timber sales.
And that's all this section relates to is timber sales?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
And what's the other section?
The other section is section 20. And this is with regard to registration. So we currently have a purchaser pre-registration, and essentially what we're doing is changing the language slightly in this particular section of the bill.
And how are you changing the language?
We're going from, Madam Chair, we're going from a pre-registration to a purchaser registration. So, again, very minor and technical changes. Essentially what we're doing is verifying the qualifications of anyone that would be a responsible bidder for one of these timber permits.
Okay.
Madam Chair,
introduce yourself,
Bob Meyer with the Department of Natural Resources. And I just want to provide a brief, real brief background about these two provisions because you will be seeing similar language like this in other department bills, if not this session, in coming sessions. Under the tutelage of former Senator, Finance Chair, Commissioner Jean Merriam, the department undertook a pretty extensive review of all the department statutes and where there were decisions or authorities granted to the commissioner to make decisions if they weren't outlined, given the Chapter 14, if we didn't have formal rulemaking process, we made sure to exempt the department from Chapter 14 so a person could see how those decisions were being made. And that's the reason we have this language here today. You'll see language like that in almost every bill or every option that we put to the legislature that has a decision coming forward. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to give you, Madam Chair and members, a brief background because we will be back again talking about these activities in the future.
So you're talking about this is not so much the exception but the rule to be exempt from rulemaking?
Madam Chair, we're setting the fees, for example, of firewood or canoe rentals, the price of gas within, you know, for selling gas someplace. We want to make sure that the public and people who are reading the statutes understand if that is being done through a rulemaking or via a commissioner's order or some other process.
Okay.
So I would hate to have to come back with – it was a massive undertaking that we undertook in the early 2000s to codify or recodify the DNR statutes to clarify this. So it's something we want to make sure we continue into the future.
So if it's silent, you're doing rulemaking, and if it's exemption, then it's more by commissioner order?
Madam Chair, we will try to make sure the language either says exempt or by rule.
By rulemaking. So you're just clearing either way.
Either way.
I got you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Any other questions? Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Saxog, are you testifiers? Section 15, it talks about debarment. The commissioner may debar a permit holder if the holder is convicted. Isn't that already in statute right now that they can the commissioner can do that? I mean, what's the – is there some significant thing happening that the commissioner or DNR is having problems with this in the timber area?
Mr. Bowe.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, we do have a portion in statute existing under debarment, and what this does is it changes the language and provides better clarification for when we would debar someone.
Okay. Madam Chair,
Anderson.
Could you give me an example?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, if someone were caught and convicted of stealing state timber, we would, and again, if they were convicted, we would want to debar them from, and this would, of course, be at the felony level, so not a minor go over the property line kind of thing, but a specifically out to steal wood. We would want to debar them if convicted. Depending on the severity.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
This has happened, and you're not being able to convict them? That's why you're putting in the statute?
Mr. Bowe.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, that is correct. We have not used this debarment, at least since in recent history.
Any other questions on sections that are in our jurisdiction? Okay, then let's move this bill on.
And, Madam Chair, this needs to go to judiciary.
Okay. Senator Wicklund, then, you should practice the motions. What's the motion?
Madam Chair, if we could have this move that the Senate File 563 be recommended to pass and move to judiciary.
Senator Wicklund. She makes that motion.
Yes, I make the motion.
Senate File 563 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Judiciary Committee. All those in ready to vote? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Saxon. Senator Herr has been called away, so we're going to go to Senator Eaton's bill, Senate File 1185. He had to go vote on another committee. I know I'm going to complain. I'm looking for her bill, 1185. It's after mine. Yeah, it should be right here. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 1185.
And is this
this is relating to state government ratifying labor agreements and compensation plans.
I have an A2 amendment. Is that something that you're going to offer?
Yes, ma'am.
And it's supposed to have a blank in it? Oh, delete a blank and insert March 11th. I got it. All right, Senator Eaton moves the A2 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Eaton or Mr. Hubinger?
I would just say this bill ratifies three labor contracts and one compensation plan for state employees in the executive branch. The contracts and plans will not be implemented until a bill is passed by the legislature and signed into law.
Mr. Hubinger? Comments?
Madam Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. I help staff the Subcommittee on Employee Relations. That subcommittee met earlier this week and reviewed these three contracts and the compensation plan and recommend that they be approved by the legislature. These contracts are similar to the ones that you reviewed and recommended and passed into law about 3 weeks ago. the across the boards and the step increases are comparable. The insurance provisions are identical. It might be helpful to have Ms. Holmes talk about the contracts that were negotiated by MMB, and then perhaps Mr. Dale could talk about the contract that was negotiated by Minsky with the State University faculty.
Ms. Holmes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barbara Holmes. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Labor Relations at Minnesota Management and Budget. Two of the items before you, two of the labor contracts were negotiated by MMB. The first one covers radio communications officers. These are individuals who are dispatchers in the 9/11 public safety answering sort of system, and they work within the state patrol's function at the Department of Public Safety.
And where is that in the bill? I mean, I'm not seeing the state patrol listed here.
Well, it's not the state patrol. It is referred to in the very first subdivision. It's Unit 225, which is the radio communication officers in that unit. And there are about 52 employees that are in that particular unit, and they are represented by AFSCME Council 5.
Thank you.
Again, as both Senator Eaton and Mr. Hubinger have said, the provisions in this labor contract are very similar, if not identical, to the ones that you heard earlier in this session for the other five collective bargaining agreements that were in front of you. Some very minor language changes, and the wage package is the 2% across the board, effective in January of this year. And step increases and some changes to the insurance structure where employees will be paying more in co-pays and deductibles. The second agreement before you is for the nurses that are executive branch state employees. We have about 739 nurses, about 461 of them are full-time, the remainder are part-time in some capacity. They typically work at the Department of Human Services, the Department of Corrections, Health, the Veterans Homes, Minsky, and a few other places, and they are represented by the Minnesota Nurses Association. Again, very similar language changes and insurance and wage provisions as with the other contracts. There are a couple of provisions in the nurses' contract that are in front of you that are different from the rest of the contracts, and I just want to point that out to you. What the agencies have informed us of is they have a great deal of trouble recruiting nurses and retaining them. And part of that has to do with the labor, and I don't know if I want to call it a shortage anymore, but that certainly nurses have been, there has been a tight labor market. But the other factor is the jobs that we have our nurses do, a lot of the jobs that we have them do, they're very difficult jobs. They can be with very difficult clientele. And we have some significant problems in staffing these functions. And our agencies are subject to some minimum staffing levels, also requirements by statute. So we've come up with a couple of things to help them address this. And all of these provisions were management proposals. I want you to know that these weren't things that were coming from the union. These are things that the agencies felt they wanted to try. One of them is a student loan reimbursement program. That's not an uncommon thing to see in some occupations, especially in the medical field. It is discretionary with the agency, so if one agency feels they want to use this and they have the money, they can decide to use it, and they can decide to use it on an individual employee basis. What it allows them to do is reimburse student loan debt that an employee has up to a maximum of $5,000 a year and up to a maximum of $25,000 per individual. The employee has to have been working for us for a year, and after they get a payment, they have to stay working for us for a year. It is, there are a lot of other sort of rules and regulations about the way this is implemented. And because this is a sort of a new situation, what we at MMB, who negotiated the labor contracts, asked the agencies, we wanted to keep this in a pilot program status because we want to see how it works, how much they spend, and if it's really useful. So we do have a sunset date on it of 2015. And that will allow us at that time to take a look at it. And if we think it is helpful, we still need it, we can renegotiate. We could renegotiate the terms of it and how it's set up. The other thing that we have a problem with is staffing weekend shifts. And typically, if there is no one available and we need to assign someone, the way the labor contracts work, we go to the least senior person. Well, that means the least senior person is always picking up weekend shifts, and we have trouble keeping those people. They just don't want that. So we have a mechanism where if an employee volunteers to pick up a weekend shift, they get a $100 differential or bonus if you want to. And that, too, is a pilot program that we're trying out to see if that works and to see how much money is spent. The only other thing we're doing different in here is we are adding a new differential. If you're a nurse and you are designated as charge nurse for a particular shift, which means you're in charge of everybody else on the unit, you will get $1.50 more per hour for that particular shift. So those are the differences in this particular contract from the rest of them that have already been passed and approved by the legislature.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. Will you introduce yourself for the tape?
Madam Chair, members, my name is Chris Dale. I'm the Senior System Director for Labor Relations with the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I was the chief spokesperson with respect to the contract before you with the interfaculty organization representing the state university faculty.
Okay.
Briefly, Madam Chair, the settlement with the state university faculty is similar to the other settlements, though there is no compensation provided for in the first year of the agreement. There are a return step for faculty in the second year of the agreement and a schedule enhancement. The steps for this unit are consistent and regular at 2.4% increase for each additional step. There is a similar increase negotiated with respect to our adjunct faculty, and we have provided for an increase in the rate of reimbursement to faculty for assessment of prior learning. This is a growing area of faculty work, and we have tried to match our rate of reimbursement or compensation with the national standards in this area, and we were below that significantly before. We have an somewhat unusual provision in that we have faculty who are eligible to take unpaid parental leave. Now, of course, they have that benefit available to them under the Family and Medical Leave Act, but our contract extends the term of that leave, if the faculty member is so interested, up to the full 9-month academic year or 9-month appointment. We have provided in our agreement that if a faculty member chooses to take unpaid leave, if they stay out for the entire semester, that is, if they take the unpaid leave in full semester increments, they would be eligible for a $1,500 lump sum payment to help defray the cost of the COBRA insurance benefits that they incurred while they were on that unpaid parental leave. There are a few additional language items that are unique to faculty appointment types, and I can elaborate on those if you would like, or I can stop now.
Well, Mr. Dale, in the interest of full disclosure, I am an adjunct faculty member at Metro State, and at least I'm getting a raise at one of my jobs.
Madam Chair, I take that as an invitation to move on a little bit with a little more detail. And I'm pleased to say, by the way, that if you are a faculty member at our two-year institutions, at least there's a tentative settlement there, although I'm not here to discuss the terms of that. The adjunct faculty will be experiencing a similar rate increase as was negotiated for the regular faculty, and currently the adjunct faculty are paid a minimum of $1,200 per credit, and the rate will move up to $1,258 per credit and will be pegged to a fraction of the step one of the instructor scale, so that if there are schedule enhancements in the future, the adjunct faculty would get the benefit of those schedule enhancements. With respect to sick leave, we have had a particular problem with our adjunct and community faculty, both on accruals and usage of sick leave. Mm-hmm. The sick leave provisions were negotiated and into the agreement before adjunct and community faculty were even in the unit, and they were brought into the unit subsequent to that. And the sick leave provisions weren't really designed for that type of kind of part-time transient faculty. And what we have done is we've replaced the current sick leave, an accruing sick leave benefit, with essentially something akin to a PTO, just some paid time off each semester should you have reason due to your own illness or the illness of a family member to miss a class, a duty day class, for an adjunct faculty member. So we have replaced the current sick leave provisions with that type of leave. It's non-accruing, and it will help us eliminate some of the ongoing problems we have had with accruals and the usage of that particular type of leave.
I think I've accrued about 5 years of sick leave or something.
It's
been a very strange system.
I'm pleased to report, Madam Chair, that your sick leave balance will not disappear unless you have a sufficiently long break in service, so that should you move to a fixed-term or permanent probationary position, you would be able to take that balance with you absent a length of break of service of too long a period of time.
Well, I didn't even know it existed for a long time, so I find my own substitutes. Any questions on the contracts?
We have one more.
One more testifier.
Or one more contract.
One more contract. Right. Oh, Ms. Holmes, sorry.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill also in Subdivision 4 would provide for ratification of the compensation plan for unrepresented employees at the Office of Higher Education. They actually write their own plan, but MMB statutorily is required to approve it. It is very similar to the provisions in the managerial and commissioner plans that were brought before you before. We do have some people from the Office of Higher Education here if you have some specific questions about their programs or their employees.
Okay. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Does anyone else in the room like to testify on this bill?
Yeah, there's two of us. Peterson, go first.
Oh, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Eaton, I'm just looking at the back page here. Am I understanding the incremental cost in this biennium for the three contracts is what, roughly $10.4 or $10.5
million? So you added the numbers up. Excuse me. Madam Chair.
Under the biennial new money column, that's where I got my numbers from.
So if you added the three numbers up or the four numbers up for these three agreements, I'll have to trust your math. I didn't.
But I'm looking at the right numbers, I guess, is my question.
Yes, you are.
Okay. And then do you guys know what the, Madam Chair, thank you, the tails or the new biennium incremental cost would be then?
Ms. Holmes.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, the percentage number in the far right column represents what the tails would be into the future, so you would need to take that number and multiply it by the biennial base, I believe, to get the actual dollar amount, and that isn't on this list.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't think I understood that. Multiply it by the biennial base. What is the biennial base?
Madam Chair, the fourth column from the right
is the
sets forth
base.
What the biennial okay. base is, and that's, again, the cost of our salaries at going into contract negotiations. And so if you look again at the far right percentage and multiply the biennial base by that number, you will get what the tails are,
okay.
as we like to call them.
All right. Thank you. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you tell me what the increase for the employees here would be? I see it's a 2.5% across the board, and then the step increases. If you add that together, is there a percentage of increase?
Ms. Holm.
Madam Chair, Senator, for the radio control operators, their step increases are 2.7%. And that can occur annually if you have satisfactory performance and if you are not at the top of the salary range. So for radio control operators, you could get a 2.5%, you could get a 2% across the board, and then you could get steps in both years. So what is that, 5.4, 7.4, or whatever.
4.7 maybe.
For the nurses, the size of their steps is larger. Their steps are 4% in each year, and again, you have to be within the salary range to get those. So, if you added those together, obviously that equals 10% that some may be eligible for if they have satisfactory performance, and that's over the last two-year period.
So you said, I'm sorry, you said 10%? Thank you.
Yes.
Did you say Dahl again?
I did.
We'll have to spend more time together. thank you, Madam Chair. I'm kind of taken back, and I know we probably said this before, and it is interesting that on the Chamber of Commerce Day at the Capitol here, I represent a lot of people, and they're struggling with a job in the first place. They're not getting the raises. The businesses are feeling the pressure of taxes and having to lay people off, and yet we're increasing sometimes up to 10% the government workers and those involved here, where the general citizen is really hurting. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I care about all jobs. I mean, that's what it's about. But how does it help to increase jobs here when the general public is hurting? What does that say to them? And is that what I'm voting on? Increasing some jobs percentages here while others are voting? It's really hard for me to vote for this.
Senator Hayden.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I know I just came and missed a good part of the discussion. I am captivated by Senator Hall's, I think, overly general discussion and talking points, probably, and talking points around this issue. I'm not sure that every single business is struggling. I'm not sure that people aren't getting raises. I'm not sure that professional folks aren't going out and trying to figure out and growing their business or in corporations that are growing. Some aren't. We've heard about some businesses that aren't doing that well in Minnesota, but we hear about businesses that are doing well. Last time I looked, the stock market hit an all-time high. So I just think to overly generalize what the private market is doing, I've been around here for almost, I guess, 4 years and a couple months now, and I hear this kind of general hammering on public employees as if somehow, somewhere, they're getting just rich. And I don't necessarily think that is true. I think that what would be better to do is to kind of look at the job that these folks are doing relative to the same opportunities that they're in the private market and do some analysis, and then make the statement about what this particular issue is or what this particular job is relative to the private market. But a general statement, when we see each and every day that wealthy people are getting more wealthy, that the stock market is growing, and that a lot of Minnesota companies are doing good, and there may be some that aren't doing well, but I just think that Senator Hall, with all due respect, that statement is an overgeneralization of what's going on in our economy.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Hayden. I appreciate your comments. But let's just talk about this business, the state of Minnesota. Are we doing well? I hear we have a deficit, and I hear it from the other side of the aisle that, boy, what a position we're in. We may not be $5 billion as we were 2 years ago, but we're still in a deficit. We're not paying back the schools, but we're increasing salaries. So that's where I get a little bit of my information. Let's not look at the private sector. Let's just look at the public sector. We're hurting, and yet we're trying to increase certain areas. So, again, I have a problem with that. I have a problem to vote on that. You know, it is what it is, but I'm not going to vote for something to increase when we don't have it.
Well, Madam Chair, just to that point, I can appreciate that, but I think that that when we look at our public employees, that we are lean, that we look across the country, we're running a pretty good operation here, and it looks like our state is going the right way. But I am concerned that we want to have the best people, and that we do want to be competitive, because it is important, the services that the folks give for the state. And this kind of, you know, idea that somehow, you know, the private market, as important as it is, as much as they do, and many of us have worked in it and continue to work in it, but I don't want to do that at the expense of acting as if those that do the great work, working on behalf of citizens of Minnesota that work for the state, don't need an opportunity to make sure that their rates are competitive. I think we just saw something that came out of the compensation group that looks at our pay, and they said that they wanted it to grow. Now, we don't know if we're going to do that, and we don't know if it's politically feasible, but I think that it does bear some conversation that our economy is going the right way and that the state is doing better and we're continuing to do better, and I think we are starting to pay our schools back. And at the same time, if we want to be competitive and make sure that the services that the state offers are going to do it at the highest level, we need to ensure that we have good people. And the best way to get good people is to make sure they're compensated appropriately.
Senator Hall.
Madam Chair, thank you so much. Well, then I would hope that you would want to pay back the schools this year, and I would hope that you would want to fully fund education, special education especially, before we start expanding the government more and more and or increasing pay. Let's pay for what we've got right now before we increase.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to the – or Madam Chair, excuse me, to that point, I think if I was in the Education Committee, this would be a nice conversation. And when we do have that conversation on the floor, I'd be more than happy to look at that proposal and have that conversation, Senator Hall. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If there – seeing no more discussion, Senator Hayden moves that Senate File 1185 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. And I'm sorry, that was to be sent to finance. Do I have to remake the motion? All right, let's remake the motion. Senator Hayden moves that Senate File 1185, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
And thank you for filling in, Senator Hoffman. You did an excellent job.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We're going to do a doll. Senator... Senator Dahl. I don't know what you were waiting for. Okay. Well, give him a chance to come back. Do Dahl's, and we can do mine in the chamber.
Madam Chair, members, Senate File 1283, and this should take just a few minutes. I have the A1 amendment to put that bill in the prescribed template, if you will, for what we expect of our task force.
Then let's look for this. Senator Dahl, do we have the A1 amendment here? Yep. All right. Senator Dahl moves the A1 amendment. First committee, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is before us. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, and what this Career Pathways Advisory Task Force does, it actually was part of a larger assessment bill that was heard in the Education Policy Committee over many, many hours, and we are retooling the testing requirements for our high schoolers, the grad tests, and the suite of assessments that we're going to make sure that we have in place to make sure our students are career and college ready. And so we believe that this task force, which is kind of models or has come about from the assessment task force that did such great work over this last summer, put together a report that we've read in education policy, and then the work that we did this legislative session, a number of us put together an assessments bill that is being heard, will be part of the education omnibus bill. And so rather than bringing you the whole omnibus education policy bill, we separated this to
it's a good idea
to make streamline the process a little bit. I'll stand for questions.
Good thinking. Are there any questions? Ms. James, does this A1 amendment then meet the guidelines of the committee?
Madam Chair and members, yes. As amended by the A1, this task force will meet the guidelines.
Okay. Any other questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, is this a new committee or is it to replace another committee that's already been sunsetted and we're looking for something else to do?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dahl. And Senator Anderson, again, I would rather not have a whole bunch of task force, but I think that the work of the – actually, it was an assessment working group that did – there was about 28 persons on that particular group did such a good job that we want to make sure as we implement this new assessment – suite of assessments, if you will – going forward that we do get it right. As you look at some of the duties, you know, we want to improve secondary, post-secondary outcomes, align education programs serving students and adult learners, make sure we meet workforce needs, make sure our courses are aligned with high school and secondary. There's a whole host of things that have been talked about for years, and I think that this would be a good work and long overdue work to make sure that all the testing that we've been doing in high school, and there's too much testing, that the tests that we are offering are meeting the needs not only for students going to work right after high school but also going to college, so there'll be less remediation once we get there. So I think that the while I'd rather not have another task force, I think that this it was asked for by the working group to make sure that what we are going to be doing with assessments is the right approach.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Dahl, you just said asked for by the working group. What working group is that?
Madam Senator Chair Dahl. And Senator Anderson, again, I referenced the assessments working group that met, the 28 members that met over this last interim and gave a report, which I'd be happy to send to you, that was delivered December of 2012. And so we were working off that to create our legislation, and which we do have a bill moving forward, Senate File 1103, and again, to make sure that indeed that is going well, we wanted to make sure that we had a working group to follow up.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Senator Dahl, the working group, was that sunsetted and has been dispensed with, or is it going to still be in effect, or – is it going to be part of – are you going to meld
Madam
that
Chair
into some of this?
Senator Anderson, that has gone away, that working group.
Senator Dahl.
It's gone. Thank you.
Senator Hall.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, who does the career pathway advisory stuff right now? Who does that within the school system? Or I assume that's where it's at.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall, who does the career pathways? You know, I think that's the good question, and I think as we are trying to get a handle on the number of assessments that we ask our students to take for diagnostic purposes, for school accountability, soon for teacher professional development and entire systems accountability. I think, you know, we ask our guidance counselors, we ask our school administrators, we ask the school board, we ask a lot of them. So, again, the working group, that, again, that we crafted Senate File 1103 on, and which this was originally part of that bill, is trying to make sure that we're not over-testing, that we are streamlining our testing, and that the testing that we are asking of our students really gets to some really basic questions. This also fits very nicely with the four-point plan that was put together by Commissioner Casilius, Commissioner Pogemiller, and Chancellor Rosenstone. This bill that we put together with the task force that was attached to that is all part of this bigger picture. All the testing that we're doing, is it over-testing? How can we streamline it? And are we getting the information that we need from those tests?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
So are you saying that our school counselors that are working with this right now are not doing the job, or they're not asking the right questions, or they're not directing the kids the right way?
Madam
Senator
Chair
Dahl.
And Senator Hall, no, the school counselors are overworked. They have so many different jobs and wear so many different hats. The problem is school A doing what school B is, and are they talking to the universities? Are they talking to the Department of Education. So there's a lot of hopefully we can do a lot more coordination that we can all get on the same page in terms of what do we want from our tests, what do we want from our students when they take those tests. Are they going to be college ready? Are they going to be career ready? So the counselors are definitely doing their jobs, and they're the most overworked people in our school building with one counselor for every 500 students on average. So we just want to give them some good direction on where this new bill and this new suite of assessments is going.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl. How long was the previous advisory task force in effect?
Madam Chair and Senator Hall, there was no previous advisory task force. It was a working group that met together over this last interim.
Okay. And Madam Chair?
Senator Dahl.
Can you tell me who the House author is on this bill?
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Breinert and I have been working with many of the people that are on that working group over the last 2 months to make sure that we put together a bill that really works. That's the beauty of the working group. Made some recommendations, and nearly unanimous. And we actually put a bill together that was born of the working group. So there's a success story. We hope that this task force can also show some good results.
Any other questions, members of the committee? Anyone in the audience want to testify? All right, Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I then move Senate 1283 as amended, and I believe that's referred to the Education Policy Committee.
Okay. The motion is that Senate Bill 1283 is amended, be recommended to pass, and re-referred to the
Education Finance. Yes.
Oh, then it just goes straight to Finance.
That's correct.
And referred to the Finance Committee. Thank you, Senator Torres Ray. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The chair's in doubt. Let's just take it again. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say nay.
No.
Chair still in doubt. All those in favor, raise your hand. Okay. Opposed, please raise your hand. Okay. It passes on a 6-4 vote. Just the four of you are very loud.
That's probably true.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
now, where
members.
Are we?
Is that good or bad?
Chamberlain. Senator Chamberlain. Senate File 536. Senator Chamberlain, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Happy to be here. I see many of my members from Education Committee. Hope we have short memories.
Deja vu.
This is a good bill.
Senator Chamberlain has an author's amendment, and maybe one of your friends on the Education Committee would like to offer. Hearing none, maybe one of your other friends would like to offer it. Senator Dahl. Senator Dahl moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Chamberlain.
Madam Chair, thank you. Just quickly, this amendment, technical fixes to counsel Stephanie James caught these technical fixes. The first one is simply adds a definition of commissioner. Second one clarifies the funding on the last page. We want it for both years. And then there's a cross-reference in there as well. So clarification and technical fixes on that.
That's the amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then do you want to just explain the bill?
Yes, ma'am. I'll briefly, 30 seconds, and I have with me Director John Creasel, former representative from the House, and he works with the Anoka County Director of Veteran Services out there. The bill, these enhancement grants have been around for a while. They've been funded at various levels in the past. I might be corrected about that. But what this is asking is for three things. Increasing the funding for these enhancement grants to the veterans, to the counties, and restructuring how it's done. And then thirdly is restructuring how it's done. And The second piece is they used to fund it on 3-year cycles, so now it's annual. So increasing the funding, going from 3-year cycles to the annual, and thirdly, restructuring how it's funded based on veteran population in the counties. With that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Kreisel, and he can explain it a little further. Thank you.
Mr. Kreisel, welcome back to the legislature.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is John Kreisel. I'm the Director of Veteran Services for Anoka County. We are in support of this bill. Things that we've used, it gives county veteran service offices across the state flexibility with some funds to be innovative in some ways to reach out to veterans, to come up with ways to help them get benefits that they've earned. What we've done in the past in Anoka County is when veterans go to get evaluations for PTSD, for post-traumatic stress disorder, to try and get that service connected and get it get counseling and that sort of thing, sometimes it's denied. It's denied by the VA because they don't believe that there's service connection. And what we've done with some of this grant money is send them to get private evaluations to get a better medical opinion that would overturn this decision by the VA. And then these veterans would then be granted service connection and have access to medical care and counseling that would help them lead happy, healthy, productive lives. And so that's just one of the many things that this type of grant helps us do. And I would stand for any questions if you had any.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Kreisel? Mr. Schoen.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Milton Schoen. I'm the Director of Veteran Service for Hennepin County, and I'm the Legislative Chair for the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers. Our association supports this bill, and because this would enhance the return on investment of our county veteran service officers and what we do. 95% of the federal VA claims are originated by county veteran service officers. Over 95% of our budgets come from property tax, and in some counties that can limit the resources that we obtain. In 2006, 30% of the Guard and Reserve troops who came back from Iraq and Afghanistan in our country enrolled in VA health care. In 2007, when the 2,600 troops came back from Iraq to Minnesota, our county veteran service officers were there. We enrolled them in VA health care. We've enrolled 11,000 returnees from Iraq and Afghanistan, be they Guard or Reserve, since then. 98% of our Minnesota National Guard is enrolled in VA health care. And with a zero state share for VA health care, that makes a difference in the bottom line of this state. One of the reasons we did this is when these veterans get into the VA, the VA recognizes post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, and other conditions that occur as a result of combat, and those costs will be borne by the federal government. This will allow strong counties to respond to need. It'll foster innovation, whether it's in reducing Medicaid spending, helping with the reintegration of our troops as they come back, with transportation, outreach, in addressing the needs of women veterans and other underserved groups and the homeless, or establishing veterans courts. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Schoen. Any questions? Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Ms. James, specifically under this bill, what are we looking at? We can't approve money, but what are we looking at from our standpoint as a committee?
Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson and members, veterans issues are within the jurisdiction of this committee.
Finances?
Not finances, exactly, no.
So specifically, Ms. James, what are we dealing with? Just the
Senator Anderson, Ms. James.
The language?
Madam Chair and members, the bill doesn't merely appropriate money, but it also makes changes to a program that appropriates money to counties.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Anybody from the audience who wants to comment?
Madam Chair.
Senator Chamberlain.
It does merge a couple programs with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Administration, and it does come, the money goes to the county, so I imagine that might have some link to the local gov piece. It comes from the state and back through the counties to administer the money and the programs. And I, just in closing, I'm not one for big, one somebody who's big on spending money. But a couple things on this. Well, there's some priorities for government, and one of them was our veterans. And there is going to be an increasing need because of the, as was mentioned, the Iraqi and the Afghan war, the war veterans coming back recently. They're going to spike. So there's a need there. It is a priority. Counties are the point of contact. So in that light, I hope you can see it, to pass it on. I think we're going to go to State Gov Vets Finance.
I'd like to make a comment.
Please come up to the table. Just introduce yourself for the tape and the members.
Good afternoon, Madam. I'm David Sweet with Premier Imagery.
David, what was the last name?
David Sweet.
Sweet. Mr. Sweet, welcome.
And I just wanted to comment that I've been working with the supporting our veterans as part of Operation Sweet Christmas. This is some of the veterans that we're doing a docudrama movie on, We've Got Your Back. And so this, I think, bill would be very important, supporting many of our veterans come back and they get misdiagnosed. And so this will allow many of them to get reevaluated. And I talked to Mr. Kreisel, the director, how important that is. So I just want to make sure that everyone's aware that, you know, these servicemen were from Atlanta. And Atlanta is the number one airport in the world. And so down there in Atlanta, this is how they live and breathe military. So up here we don't see the presence, but down there there's literally thousands of military coming in and out of that airport every day. And many of these men are very, very seriously wounded. Some of them have very serious mental injuries. So I just want to make sure everyone's aware that maybe up here we don't see them, but down there in the South, it's very prevalent. So I just want to make sure everyone's aware that they made extreme sacrifices. Thank you
very much. Any questions for Mr. Sweet? Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Senator Hayden moves that Senate File 536, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thanks.
Senator Anderson, would you be willing to chair while I do for my bill?
Anderson.
Thank you. Senator Anderson? Yep, he's coming. Great.
You are great today in Congress. I was like,
I know, where did he go? Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, I have the A13 amendment, author's amendment.
Senator Pappas, would you move your bill and then we'll get the amendment?
Senator Anderson, that's a House custom.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So we don't usually move the bills until the very end.
Okay. Very good.
So I'll just move the A13 amendment. What that does, it takes out all the paddle ticket sections and the paddle wheel sections of the bill.
Okay. Senator Pappas moves the A13 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Amendment's been passed. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is the kind of Allied Charities annual bill, and we are making several changes to the lawful gambling provisions, including raising the threshold for organizations from more than $500,000 to $750,000 before they have to have an annual financial audit. We're also saying that an applicant for a linked bingo game provider license must attach to its application evidence of a bond not less than $100,000 rather than the current $100,000, because it could go higher. It expands the allowance for off-site gambling permits for an organization from 4 to 12 events per calendar year, and an organization is required to check the ID of a pull tab winner if the prize is over $100 or over instead of the current $50. So really the purpose here is to help our local charities to streamline the process, to maybe eliminate some bureaucracy, and just make it a little more practical and more reasonable without creating any risk in the the enterprise. And I have with me Mr. Al Lund, who is the executive director of the Allied Charities. And if there are any questions, Mr. Barrett from the Gambling Control Board is also here.
Thank you, Senator.
You're welcome.
Mr. Lund, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the committee, please.
Mr. Chair, Alan Lund, executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. Thank you.
Great. Good to be. Any questions, members, for the author or for Mr. Lund or for Mr. Barrett?
You did a great job.
Okay. I took away all his testimony.
You did a great job.
There's a testifier. Please.
Page numbers on the amendment.
Oh, Senate Counsel, we have the wrong page numbers on the amendment.
Yes.
Page one.
Ms. James?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Pappas and members, the amendment has some errors, so I will suggest an amendment to the A13 to fix it. On line 1.2, delete 1 and insert 2, delete and after 3 insert, or after the 2 insert a comma, and after the 3 insert a comma and insert and 4. Delete line 1.3 of the amendment. On line 1.4 of the amendment, after delete 3 and insert 5. And then I believe it works.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would then move that amendment to the amendment. Everyone's clear.
Senator Pappas moves the amendment to the amendment to on line 1.2, delete 1 and put it add 2 after 2 at a comma, strike and after 3, insert a comma, insert and 4, delete 1.3, and on 1.4, delete, cross out 3, and insert 5. Are there any comments to the amendment as amended? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Amendment is adopted. Senator Pappas.
I just stand for questions.
Any questions, members, of Senate File 1006 as amended?
And the Gambling Control Board does support this.
No questions?
Boy. This is not the omnibus gambling bill.
Senator Pappas, if you'd like to move your bill.
Oh, I will. Mr. Chairman, I would move that Senate File 1006 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance.
Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 1006 be recommended to pass and as amended and sent to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Amendments.
I think Senator Herr is still held up in another committee, so Senator Hayden is going to present the first bill. He's a co-author.
A little rusty.
I wonder if he's seen it.
We'll have to call on you again, Senator Anderson. Excellent job.
That was the quickest I've seen.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 423, the MPCA policy bill, and I am pinch hitting for Senator Herr, as you've indicated, and Mr. Kadelka is here from the agency to walk us through the bill.
And I think you could give us just a little overview, then mostly we're interested in just the sections that are before our committee, but I realized before if we don't have a little overview, then we kind of don't know what we're doing. So,
Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Kirk Adelka. I'm an assistant commissioner with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. As the author mentioned, this is the PCA's policy bill. It has three parts. One is adding a couple policy pieces dealing with how we use clean water funds. The second deals with how we use environmental covenants for our petroleum remediation cleanup program. The second large part of the bill is a reduction in reports that the agency does to the legislature. A number of them are reports that every year are exactly the same, so we would like to space them out in a less frequent basis. And finally, each year, every agency must do an obsolete rules report. and we have repealers in the bill that carries out the elimination of those rules that are now obsolete. The other two parts of the bill that are specifically dealing with local units of government and state government that to highlight are Section 2 of the bill is a wastewater lab certification program. Currently, wastewater labs and drinking labs have a certification program for quality assurance through the Department of Health. As the drinking water lab needs have grown, that program has become much more rigorous and has outgrown the needs of the wastewater labs. Since many labs only handle wastewater and not drinking water, they're in a program that's oversized for their needs. What we're proposing to doing is taking that part from the Department of Health back, creating a program at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency to reduce the cost to local cities, and it would be less regulation for them and a reduction of costs. This is something the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and others have asked for in the past. The second
so part could just slow down for a minute. So that's on page 3, subdivision 2, the rules.
Madam Chair and committee members, correct. Section 2, and then there are rules adoptions, the possibility for it on 3.12 through 3.14.
Okay, thank you.
The second item of interest is in the second article. Currently, sanitary district formation is done by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, the administrative work. We have come to the realization that this mirrors very closely to the municipal boundary changes that are done by the Office of Administrative Hearings, and they are a much better place to do this. They come into our office very infrequently and believe that we would be good government to have the Office of Administrative Hearings handle that. So what we're doing is repealing what is in the Minnesota Pollution Control Statutes, and Article 2 is putting it over into the Office of Administrative Hearings. Specifically, on page 13, line 7, there is rulemaking authority for the Office of Administrative Hearings to produce rules to allow for the formation, dissolution, and modification of sanitary districts. This mirrors what they have currently for the municipal boundary change portion of their operation.
Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson, I don't usually have to tell the audience to please remember to turn off your cell phones, but please do. Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Kavalka, is the administrative law or administrative office of hearings okay with this change of taking your responsibility, taking this over?
Mr. Kadelka?
Madam Chair and committee members, we have worked with them throughout the whole entire process, and they're here, too, also in support of the change.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Susan Sliceman. I am the court executive at the Office of Administrative Hearings, and we have worked with the Pollution Control Agency in a cooperative effort to produce the authority coming to the OAH. And we are in agreement, and we're happy to.
I'm sorry. Did you introduce yourself? I missed
yes,
it.
Yes, I'm sorry. Susan Sliceman. I'm the court executive at the Minnesota Office of Administrative Hearings.
Okay, great.
And yes, the Office of Administrative Hearings is supporting.
What's your last name again?
Sliceman.
Sliceman. Okay, thank you.
And we are supportive of the change of the authority to the OAH.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Kadelka, is there anything else that's under our jurisdiction here?
Madam Chair and committee members, those are the only other
those
items.
Are the only items. Okay. All right. Does any members have any question? Anyone else in the audience? Then Senator Hayden moves that we didn't make any amendments, right? And where's this bill going?
Finance.
Okay. Then Senator Hayden would move that Senate File 423 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Okay. I don't. Well, it's okay. Senator, thank you very much, Senator Hayden, for pinch hitting there. Senator Herr is still tied up in committee, but I'd like to ask the testifiers maybe to come forward and provide the presentation, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Zhang Vang, Mr. Chu Vu, and Mr. Paul Mandel. Mr. Mandel still here? Oh, yeah, great. Maybe the three of you could, you know, give us an overview of the project. And we do have to find a co-author in order to move this bill if Senator Herr can't return to us, and we're in the process of looking for a co-author. We can pass that out for you, or if you just want to hand it to the pages. Great, thank you. Welcome to the committee, and I'm sorry we don't have Senator Herr here. I'm sure he's very sorry, too. But if you'd like to just introduce yourself for the committee and tell us about your project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Sa Vang, a former lieutenant of the Special Guerrilla Units. I am 63 years old. I am the executive director of the HU Veteran and Family of USA, Inc. As you may see around the room, many of the former Special Guerrilla Units with me today, we are here to express the importance of the bill. Therefore, as the representative of the veterans, I ask your support. The HU mission were guard American air navigation radar to rescue American down pilot hit and run the North Vietnamese army who were preparing from moving into South Vietnam through the Ho Chi Minh Trail inside Laos to attack American troops in South Vietnam. For 15 years, Laos served faithfully and honestly on the Special Guerrilla Units. More than 100,000 lives were lost while defending the interests of the United States as well as saving American military personnel life in South Vietnam. If there was no SU help, what of the North Vietnamese Army from the entering South Vietnam, the death and casualty of the American soldiers who were there protecting American freedom and democracy around the world would have been greater than the 58,000. According to former CIA Director Mr. Richard Helms, this was a major operation for the agency. It took manpower, it took special skill manpower, it was dangerous, it was difficult. We are asking you to welcome us and acknowledge our effort with the United States on the secret war. Today, Madam Chair and member of the committee, we are asking you to support this Minnesota Hmong Lao Veteran Commemorative Bill, SF-651.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and I would just like to thank the former Special Guerrilla Unit veterans who are with us today. I'd like to thank you very much for your service. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair, Senator Hayden is going to see if he can get Senator Herr away from his meeting, if he can step out for a while. So, I just wanted to let you know that hopefully he will be.
And we do have Senator Rest here who can move the bill at the appropriate time, and I hope Senator Herr will be able to make it. And then did we have
Madam Chair, I have three statements to make.
Okay, please proceed.
The federal government have already done the memorial statue in the Arlington Cemetery for the HU, and the California one have done theirs, and the Wisconsin have done theirs. So now it is time for the Minnesota to help us to do ours.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chuvu.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam, and committee members. I wanted to thank you, all of you, for this great opportunity. In addition to the previous Minnesota State legislatures and the Capital Area of Architectural Planning Board, Paul Mandel was here on behalf of that board for granting an area in the state capitol ground to honor the United States volunteering veterans and the people in Laos during the Vietnam War. This memorial for the Hmong and Laotian and the United States Volunteering Service had taken more than 5 years to complete it. Our planning committee members are committed to ensure that one day the memorial will be built on the Capitol ground. We are coming to ask you again, the state legislature leaders and the citizens of Minnesota, to honor and support this project. With this additional funding, we will be able to raise the other fundings to cover the remaining costs of the project. The graphic design and the designated area, as you see some of the passing flyer, were selected and already approved by the CAD board We have completed the first phase of this project already. The second phase will be involved.
Excuse me, let me interrupt you for a minute because Senator Hur is here, and Senator Rest, you can go back to transportation. Thank you. Thank you for your service, Senator Rest.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt you. Please proceed.
Thank you. The second phase will be involved drifting the RIND language on the wall, selecting displaced photos and drawings, arts to mount on the sprout. The works will need to be carefully researched, selected, and approved by the Hmong Aw committee members, the Minister of Veterans Affairs, and the CAD Board. This process requires professional input, public announcement, budget planning, and selection of the constructors. The process might take another 2 to 5 years before we could complete the memorial, so the work has begun. During the last 6 years of planning, we have committee members, advisors, and funders who have contributed a lot to the project and have passed away. They have hoped to see the actual memorial, but they did not live to see the completion. We have some of them are here, and some of them are already gone. So again, we're asking you to consider our request. Please support this bill and pass. Support this project and pass this bill. And thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Mr. Mandel, did you have comments? This looks very familiar to me. It seems like I was on the CAP board when this proposal happened once before. Did the legislature never fund it, or what happened?
Madam Chair, Paul Mandel, Principal Planner for the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, and you are correct. This was here before. We had some state funds that we used to execute the design competition and secure the design. The CAP board approved both the design and the site approximately just to the southwest of the Vietnam Memorial, as it now stands. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, in their private fundraising efforts to match the state dollars, the time that lapsed when bond monies are canceled occurred, and what actually happened was there was no action, and there being no action on the piece, it automatically canceled. Mm-hmm. So they lost the state monies, and their efforts then were thwarted. So we're just here today to say the process continues. We have the design. We are ready to go, and I would welcome the participation of the state to, again, reward these folks for getting to know them and understanding the sacrifice that not only they but their families made was an eye-opening experience, and we're ready to work with them on this.
Thank you. And Senator Hur and Mr. Vang, it's not unusual for the state to require private groups to come up with a match to show that there's community support. So how are your fundraising efforts doing? I know I'm not supposed to talk about money, but how are your fundraising efforts doing?
Well, we have Hmong entrepreneurs, we had veterans. Right now, we are preparing that we will try hard to raise the $150,000.
What's your timeline? Yeah. Do you have like a goal?
The sooner that the state commits $350,000, then we will start raising our funding. We believe that we should have that within 1 year.
All right, Senator Hur, welcome to the committee. I'm glad that your other committee ended so you could come and join us.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience. And, I think the bill was already explained to you, but I felt that it's needed to have this memorial. You know, I know many of these gentlemen who served in war with my father, there were young men then. You know, the older generation are already gone, and I think this memorial meant a lot to not just them, well, we still recognize the one that's here, but also meant a lot to Hmong American descent themselves as a reason that we're here. And I am the third Hmong American legislator here in office already, and I've seen there's a lot of, you know, memorial around the state capital, you know, relate to Vikings and, you know, with German farmers and all that. And I think that would be a good addition.
Christopher Columbus, who never lived in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah. This will be a good addition. And I'm very confident that the timeline, I'm actually not, you know, part of the group, but I'm very confident that the group could get the money of $150,000 in less than a few months.
Mr. Vang, was there any money raised during the last effort that you have to start as a base?
The commitment that we promised to former Senator Mimua and former House Representative Saitao, mm-hmm. we said the collaborative organization will raise 25 each, and that was already prepared in that time.
That was a commitment, ready
yes.
to go.
And mm-hmm. everybody are in the intention of we will go for it the sooner the state made new commitment for us.
Okay.
And Madam
Senator
Chair, the group treasurer is also here. Yeah. If he may speak, Mr. Yeah. Mr. Yetao.
Welcome to the committee, and just introduce yourself, please.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, the members of the committee, my name is Yetao. And I'm the treasurer for the committee and also the financial chairs. Mm-hmm. And I'm very confident that with $150,000, we can raise it by the end of June. And that is my commitment to this committee.
Great. Thank you, because I really want to see this project go this time. I don't know, Mr. Mundell or someone, would you like to just describe the memorial to us a little bit? I mean, it's a little hard to read this handout and just a little bit what it means. In fact, I can't even read it.
Madam Chair, the basic design is a plaza, if you will, with a text table as you enter the space. Mm-hmm. The text table would explain some of the history behind both the memorial.
Is that on the lower left here, the text table?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The hope and the plan is that it would be done in a design similar to some of the cultural amenities that you would find in the tapestries, et cetera, mm-hmm. of the culture. The main centerpiece is what they call a sprout. The sprout, one, from being a source of food left over after everything else was devastated. It's also a living symbol. It is actually to be designed more in a, if you will, a somewhat geometric pattern shape so that the panels of the sprout, or the petals, if you will, which would be cast bronze, would receive the handiwork of the tapestries that you and others are familiar when they tell histories.
Right.
It would be the histories would be representing before the war, during the war, the resettlement and all the crises mm-hmm. Following the war, of the encampments and the fleeing of the country, and then resettlement in Minnesota. So you'd have a history in this 8-foot bronze sculpture, and then seating benches, if you will, in an artistic form, plus some native grasses along the pathway. Not that big a space, but as many of the legislators who have been around for years are aware, we continue to get pressure for memorials. And one of the things that when the last time this was going through the legislature, one of the things that our input was is that this has to represent everybody's input, and the groups have to work together. Because in Washington, they had the Vietnam Wall that everyone's so familiar with. Then they had a total of 27 other pending memorials attached to the wall. They had the nurses, they had soldiers, they had the K-9 Corps. And then from then on, it's further and further divided mm-hmm. the community. So in this case, one of our insistences was that all the groups work together. And the design was chosen by a jury that you're very familiar with as a former member of our board. That comprised some of the members from the community, some architectural members, and people, representatives of the CAP board.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, a member of
yes,
the committee.
Yes, Mr. Bang.
Based on the proposal earlier, this will not only for the Hmong and Lao veterans, but will also represent the Minnesotans who went over there to serve on the Secret War. So that will represent all the people who serve on the Secret War from Minnesota and live with Minnesota.
Thank you. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Herr, I really appreciate you bringing this up. I also want to say to the Hmong Lao veterans, it's an honor to have you here, all of you. Thank you. Not only just to have you here, but it is an honor that you served our country. And this is not something. I know your people, and you are a humble people. You don't need this. I think we need this. I think we need to put this up for you and to honor the service that you have for our country. So I want to thank you from the government and apologize that we haven't done this earlier. Thank you.
And to add on to that, Senator Hall, the we is what we're talking about. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, any other comments or questions?
Just a short comment. My name is Yatao again. Someone mentioned this, my father is original one of the community members that serve in the Veterans Committee is here. And unfortunately, he passed away in 2008 that he didn't get to see the work that he has working on. And there's a couple of members in the communities that were passing away and not be able to see this. And so I'm very humble and I'm very, I'd like to encourage you to really take a look at this seriously and support us the bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments? Anyone else in the audience want to testify?
Can, Madam Chair?
Yes, Ms. Senator.
Can I translate what you just said there to some member that might not understand what you said?
Absolutely.
Okay. Nunuatapomolitisanghaluntzino.
Victor, do you want to translate? Want to translate for me?
Yeah.
I will translate.
This
is
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape.
My name is Sai Pao Wei, the president of HU Veteran.
Welcome, Mr. Vang.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say a little bit.
We,
the Hmong people that helped served during the war, the numbers is in the thousands. We want to make sure that this project is something for our kids to see and understand the history of the Hmong people as well. We are all here today, as you can see behind you. These are pretty much what is left of the original groups, in addition to those that are at home. So we want to make you aware of that. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your service, Mr. Vang. Thank you for coming here today.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director, Children's Hope International, R&R Family Centers, and also head the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium. But I also come to you as a liaison to a number of different organizations who are unable to be here, and besides representing the consortium, showing the support that the community has for this effort. And we realize it's been some time in process. Also, as a former liaison to the Council on Asian Pacific Minnesotans, I know that the new executive director, Sia Herr, is Hmong, and she would also be supporting, but she couldn't attend our hearing either. So I'd just like to extend, you know, the consideration that they do have support of the whole Asian community.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Lee. Senator Hall.
Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion that in the bill, whatever the language needs to be changed, that we relieve them of the funds that they have to provide. I think it's up to $150,000. And that the state would then back that up.
Okay. That's Senator Ms. James.
Madam Chair, Senator Hall and members, Senator Hall is suggesting that Senate File 651 be amended on line 1.8, delete 500,000 and insert 650,000. On line 1.11, delete this appropriation is, everything after the period. Delete lines 12 through 15. And on line 1.18, delete 500,000 and insert 650,000.
Line 1.18.
Yep.
Okay, Senator Hall moves basically to change the appropriation to 650,000 for the state and no matching funds.
Senator Hayden.
Oh, Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, want to thank Senator Herr for his bill and that the veterans for their service. I think that it is extremely important and courageous and a long overdue tribute to their service. I am a little concerned about the amendment, I must say. There has been many groups that have come before the legislature with very, very noble contributions that they've made to this country. And we, I'm scared that we're setting a precedent that we are not, that we are relieving them of any of their fundraising responsibilities for this tribute. I know that there has been, I think, Madam Chair, you remember Penumbra Theater came many years ago, way before I was here, and they had a project that was very significant culturally to the state, maybe not as significant as serving in a war, but it was pretty significant, and they weren't able to meet their threshold, and they weren't able to build, and that theater now is in jeopardy of not opening. There's just many. I know the African American Museum came and they had a match that they had to make, and they're currently in negotiations. And there has been many African Americans in this state that have made contributions, not only fighting in wars, but also you know contributions to the state. So I'm just a little worried that if we do this, that now we're setting a precedent, and that if other groups that come that have made significant cultural efforts in this state, that they would look for the same thing, and if they weren't able to get that, that it would cause some inequity. So as much as I respect what Senator Hall is trying to do, and Senator Herr, I know that I've been working with you on this issue, I just don't think that this would be a good ideal at this time.
I also have to say that a lot of times we require a 50-50 match for bonding, and that this already is a lower match than normally would be required. And members, we can make this recommendation, but we don't know what – I wouldn't want to raise the community's hopes that they would be relieved of this responsibility, because the Finance Committee and the Finance Division could take a different view. And it's certainly not any disrespect for your service, but it is to show that there's really community support and it's something that you really want and that you're willing to kind of put your money where your mouth is if that's the case. So any – yes, comments?
Yes,
would
Madam
you just
Chair,
say your name again?
Yes,
I forgot
Madam
to write
Yeah,
it
yeah, Michael Tao.
Michael Tao, thank you.
Yeah, Michael Tao, and Madam Chair, and member of the community members. You know, I want to thank you, so Senator Hall, for your support for your recommendations. But I would like to feel that as a community, we want to take part of the funding also, and I want to do the fundraising, the $150,000 fundraising to match with the fund. And to hold the community as liable for the project as well.
So they feel more invested in the project then.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm. Senator Hall.
You see how right I was about this group?
Yeah.
Thank you. We appreciate and honor you again. And I withdraw my motion.
Okay. But you can make the final motion.
I would so move the final motion on Bill 651. I don't think there's an amendment on it. And where does it go?
Finance.
To the finance.
Is there any other discussion? Then the motion is that Senate File 651 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. All right.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you very much, and thank you all of you for coming today. We really appreciate your patience. There being no other business to come before the committee, we will be meeting, however, Friday at 9 a.m., and we have a long agenda. Committee is adjourned.
Don't get too excited.